court is ready to hear argument from Lightar and Anglin versus Tips.
May it please the court, Mr. Mark Donheiser will present argument for Relator. Mr. Donheiser has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. Relator, Jack Anglin Company, a Michigan corporation, seeks writ of mandamus to compel the respondent to vacate that portion of his order denying arbitration on the DTPA claims asserted by the real party in interest, the city of Jacksboro. The seemingly contested issues, those joined by the city's response, need a little bit of background because we have some rather odd arguments here. Hearing was held on the application to compel arbitration, at which point the respondent overruled the city's repeated objections to the introduction of the affidavit of Jack B. Anglin and specifically stated that he would consider that affidavit. But despite that ruling, not the DTPA claims that accompanied them. That decision was clearly wrong. If the affidavit is considered, as the court said it would, it is indisputable that this is a contract involving interstate commerce. The affidavit shows that machinery and equipment were transferred from Michigan to Texas, personnel traveled from Michigan to Texas, correspondence traveled back and forth, a performance bond was obtained pursuant to the contract from a California corporation, all on a $5 million contract. We don't think it has ever been seriously disputed that that more than satisfies the requirement of a contract involving interstate commerce. Once that is established, the federal act kicks in. The DTPA claims, as well as the contract claims, then become subject to arbitration. Federal cases and state cases, construing that act, have been clear and unequivocal. The city does not...
Why don't you have a right of appeal?
Your Honor?
Why don't you have a right of appeal?
This is not a final judgment, Your Honor.
Why isn't there a right of interlocutory appeal under the Texas statute?
If you're referring to the Texas Arbitration Act, that says that such a decision is appealable as any other order. Any other interlocutory order is appealable after final judgment. It does not say it is an interlocutory appeal is allowed. The Civil Practice and Remedies Code sections discussing interlocutory appeals make no mention of such a thing.
Well, any order that a district court ever issues is appealable on final judgment.
No, that's not correct, Your Honor. Order denying summary judgment isn't. Order granting a new trial isn't.
Even though it was typically raised on appeal that it was error to deny summary judgment, if summary judgment was also granted, you say that any one of these six orders or judgments or decrees would not be appealable but for the fact that the statute makes them so.
Your Honor, no. We think it would be appealable. In addition, Your Honor, that is the Texas Arbitration Act. It says nothing about the Federal Arbitration Act.
And your position then is no interlocutory appeal relative to the Texas Arbitration Act?
That's correct.
And really that's irrelevant because your position really is that the Texas Arbitration Act doesn't have anything to do with this. It's the Federal Arbitration Act that controls.
Well, that's our primary position, Your Honor. We have raised and pled that the Texas Act applies if the Federal Act doesn't. They both can't. If the Federal Act applies, the Texas Act is superseded.
There is an interlocutory.
But you claim you have a right to an interlocutory appeal under the federal arbitration act?
No, Your Honor. We say we absolutely do not, which is why mandamus must lie.
Why? But I thought the federal arbitration act provided for interlocutories.
No, it doesn't, Your Honor, but the courts, the federal courts under federal appellate procedure have held that this is a collateral order of it.
Okay. So the appeals are purely under the federal.
That's right.
Other federal procedural laws.
And in fact, the Texas state cases that we have cited are mandamus actions, with the exception of one or two, which are appeals of the denials of injunctions to stay arbitration, such as the Valero case. That falls under the Civil Practice and Remedies Code provision that an interlocutory appeal will lie from the denial of an injunction. The city did not argue in the trial court or before this court. The affidavit does not establish the requisite interstate commerce. Rather, it argues that the trial court improperly considered the affidavit, basically on hearsay grounds, in effect insisting that an application to compel arbitration be a mini-trial, live witnesses, cross-examination, presumably pre-hearing discovery, the whole spiel. The city, of course, did file a written response to Anglin's application to compel arbitration, and in that response raised various issues, most of which have been abandoned by this point. One issue it did not raise was that it never denied the portions of the application to compel in which Anglin alleged that the federal act applies, nor did the city present any evidence at this hearing. It merely raised for the first time during the hearing its position that we needed live testimony. The purpose of both the federal and Texas arbitration acts is to avoid the expense, inconvenience, delays attendant to litigation, to provide, if the parties so agree, a quick, inexpensive method of dispute resolution. Now, there is no rule of civil procedure governing applications to compel arbitration, as there are other types of hearings. But the Texas legislature has spoken. Article 225 says that in citing an application to compel arbitration, the court shall proceed summarily. Similarly, the Federal Act, Section 4, provides simply for a hearing to the court and, if necessary, a summary trial only if the existence of the contract itself is in dispute. In the Commerce Park case cited in our brief, the Fifth Circuit, applying the Federal Act, held that a full evidentiary hearing is not only not necessary, but would contravene the very purpose of the Act in providing inexpensive, speedy resolution. What did the Texas legislature mean when it instructed trial courts to proceed summarily? Well, given the purpose of the act of speedy and expensive resolution of disputes, the mandate that the trial court shall proceed summarily should be construed to mean a simple, inexpensive hearing.
But you're only alleging that alternative, right? I mean, you're saying the Federal Arbitration Act applies.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Okay.
We are looking for a procedure. The only response raised by the city is that the trial court didn't follow proper procedure in the hearing, that it considered an affidavit.
Was this affidavit filed in advance?
Yes, Your Honor. It shows a file mark of September 3rd, and the hearing was September 6th. We would further submit that even if the trial court did improperly consider this affidavit, there is more than sufficient evidence that this is a contract affecting interstate commerce. The city pled that Anglin is a Michigan corporation and that Anglin secured a performance bond for the completion of this work from a California corporation. These facts alone, taken from their pleadings, show a contract affecting interstate commerce. Even purely intrastate activities that affect interstate commerce involve the federal act. We have cited the Mesa operating case from the Fifth Circuit, in which a Texas partnership entered into a contract to sell gas produced in Louisiana to Louisiana consumers. The gas never left the state of Louisiana. The Fifth Circuit held that was a contract involving interstate commerce. The Texas entity crossed state lines and raised money outside of Louisiana for this deal. Now I'm quoting, citizens of different states engaged in performance of contractual operations in one of those states were engaged in a contract involving commerce under the Act. The only difference here between Mesa and this case, even ignoring the affidavit, is that instead of evidence of raising money outside of the state, something necessary for the Mesa operating deal, Anglin obtained a performance bond from outside of the state.
There is not a great deal of discussion in your brief concerning the scope of the Federal Arbitration Act, an issue or a statute about which this court has not written, at least in my term here. Well, if it applies to Deceptive Trade Practices Act, is there any Texas consumer who purchases a good or service that comes from another state who will not with appropriate contractual fine print their DTPA action preempted by the Federal Arbitration Act?
Your Honor, it's not a question of preemption. We do not take the position that because there is an arbitration clause that should be enforced, that the city does not have a DTPA clause of action. They've pled one. They've got it. Whether it's valid or not will be determined later. The question is, where will that be determined? There is no prohibition of an arbitration panel hearing tort claims, whether statutory or any other type of tort. The cases we have cited, the Legion cases, both Texas state courts and federal courts, discussing how torts can be arbitrated, how the non-waiver provision of the DTPA does not apply, and so on, do not say we're throwing those out.
Well, let me rephrase it then to in accord with your response. Is there any case in which a Texas consumer might have a complaint concerning a good or service obtained from another state that would not be subject to the provisions of the Federal Arbitration Act under your presentation, as you urge it?
Your Honor, I have not looked at all of the possible defenses to the federal act, unconscionability and so forth. So, absent
some defense that statute itself provides, the law that you're asking us to lay down today essentially has a pretty broad impact on the Texas Deceptive Trade Practices Act, doesn't it?
Your Honor, at most, to the extent of which forum they will be heard in.
Well, in other words, you'll hear it in front of an arbitration panel under the Federal Arbitration Act instead of in front of a jury as the Texas Constitution contemplates. That's the only difference.
Your Honor, if there are no defenses, that may be the case. Now, I don't know whether buying a toaster that was manufactured in Taiwan affects commerce among the nations. That issue is not before us.
Let's talk a little bit about the no adequate remedy by appeal.
Yes, Your Honor.
The standard you cite
in your brief has been modified by
That's right.
My opinion of this court filed that day, issued subsequently to your brief. Obviously, it's not equally convenient to go through a trial.
No, Your Honor.
And have arbitration later. But why should this court stop its work and grant a mandamus every time a trial judge arguably misreads the extent of a federal or state statute?
Your Honor, as to the federal statute, we have the anomalous position, if appeal is the only remedy, of this court's or the Court of Appeals denial, leading to a direct application to the United States Supreme Court, because the United States Supreme Court has made it clear that it will review decisions of state courts denying application. But more importantly, the standard has not significantly changed as far as this goes. We have two acts designed to make dispute resolution quicker, less expensive. A remedy by appeal not only is more expensive, but it completely destroys the purpose of those acts. If the only remedy is by appeal, the acts become meaningless.
Well, is there any real substantial difference in cost or timeliness of an appellate court's consideration of that order between an interlocutory appeal and a mandamus?
Oh, absolutely.
Based on summary proceedings, as you advocated?
Absolutely, Your Honor. A summary proceeding, the record is before this court, the briefs are before this court. It is easy to see how this is much quicker and less expensive than a full-blown appeal after a judgment, trial.
My question really pertained to an interlocutory appeal following the trial court's denial of a motion to abate and to submit the case to arbitration.
No, I don't think there is. It would be a significant difference between an interlocutory appeal and a mandamus action. As far as the federal act goes, though, there is absolutely no authority for an interlocutory appeal. It is not addressed anywhere, either in the Texas Arbitration Act, which, of course, by its own terms only applies to itself, or in the Civil Practice and Remedies Code.
You're talking about an appeal of a denial of applying the federal act in state court.
There's simply no procedure for a Texas appellate court to review that order by appeal.
By interlocutory appeal?
That's right, Your Honor. The only authority on interstate commerce, whether this is a contract affecting it, cited by the city is the Taos Development case from 1948. We simply ask this court to compare that case to the more recent Fifth Circuit decisions discussing the same act. It is clear that that decision was rendered in the very early stages of the development of the analysis of the federal act. It clearly does not comport with the modern trend.
Any other questions? Thank you, Kevin. The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Mike Willett will present argument for respondents.
May it please the court, I speak on behalf of the city of Jacksboro, which occupies the position of owner in this construction project. We are here in the hope that the case will be judged by the law in existence at the time that the judge heard this case.
My understanding of your position is you think the entire arbitration order was erroneous, but you're not bringing any cross.
That's
well
correct, Your
Honor. You're willing to live with it as the judge ordered.
Yes, sir. Our position is that every case we've looked at says that the party presenting plea and abatement has to present evidence. No case has ever said to the contrary. We're assuming that's still the law. Our second position is that every case we've looked at says that an affidavit is not admissible over objection because it's hearsay.
Well, an affidavit can constitute evidence, though, right? In a summary judgment proceeding and venue controversies.
Absolutely, Judge. If there are many situations where matters are resolved by a battle of affidavits. And the crucial difference to us is in those instances, the rules or a statute spell out how that's done. So if one party files an affidavit, X pays an advance to the hearing, and another party files a counter affidavit, and then maybe there's another round. And you've got a roadmap, a guideline on how you do that. Now, in this case, the affidavit was filed 3 days before the hearing, and we looked at it. We knew two things. One is that the guy that signed it showed up with tearing pieces. And the other thing was that there was no law, no case, no statute, no rule saying that an affidavit is admissible in this type of proceeding.
How else would you have us construe the requirement of a summary proceeding?
Set it quickly and act on it quickly.
You mean you equate summary with expeditions?
Absolutely. To read summary into being able to file affidavits without any guidance on which part files first and how long he's got, that's stretching things, I would think.
Did you ask the trial court for any kind of relief to give you a chance to file affidavits or to subpoena the affiant or anything like that?
No, sir. We were totally resting on existing law that the affidavit was not admissible in evidence. And as counsel said, we objected repeatedly and without success.
So, in other words, it's your position to us that you had a great defense, but you haven't presented it yet because they didn't make their procedural proof, and that's what you're resting on.
Yes, sir. Any time in my history that I failed to present my case, nobody's come to my rescue and bailed me out. And When I saw counsel willing to rest his case on an affidavit, it's clearly not admissible. When I repeatedly made my objections, I didn't feel obligated to help him by putting witnesses in front of him.
Once Judge Tipps ruled, though, you have a lot of faith.
Yes, sir. Yeah, evidently, the Fort Worth Court of Appeals fulfilled my faith. But if you accept our position, the only thing before the court is plaintiff's First Amendment petition.
They say your pleadings are sufficient to establish commerce and the application of the Federal Arbitration Act.
Two problems with that, Judge. One is that all our pleadings show is diversity of citizenship. That the bonding company and the contractor are out-of-state corporations. When my learned opponent presented the case to Judge Tipps, he said at page 31 of the transcript that what's important about these cases, it gives him a laundry list as a lawyer to figure out whether or not the Federal Act applies. The affidavit that's before the court is evidence of those elements, the parallel factors that the court looked at to determine whether interstate commerce was involved. What he's talking about is you've got to show that many materials cross state lines, that billing was done from out of state, phone calls made from out of state, that there was out of state transactions. That's his laundry list. Now he's changed position on appeal by saying that mere diversity of citizenship is enough to show interstate commerce. No case has ever said that. In fact, I've cited a Texas case that says merely because one of the parties is a foreign corporation standing by itself doesn't mean that it's interstate or intrastate commerce. You've got to show some evidence to show what kind of commerce it was. But they got a worse problem than that. Nowhere in plaintiff's original petition is the arbitration provisions of any contract mentioned. You can read all through First Amendment plaintiff's original petition and not see anything about arbitration in this contract. So if they are relegated to our pleading, there's no arbitration provisions before the court.
If the
federal act does apply, is the summary proceeding in a Texas court acceptable as the federal courts have said it is in federal court?
I assume that the procedure in state court is governed by Texas rules of civil procedure, Texas statutes, and case law. I've never looked at it, but I assume the federal government has no power to tell us how to operate procedure. I presented our position briefly, but fully, and if the court has any questions, I'll certainly respond.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Counsel, you're correct that there are various areas in Texas procedure where affidavits are allowed. Summary judgment, special appearances, venue. In any of those areas, is the trial judge called upon to make, to resolve a disputed question of fact from that affidavit? In summary judgment, it's got to be respondent's version has got to be taken as true. In venue, it's a series of tiebreakers, but there's never a disputed question of a fact. If something's pled, it's taken as true. And then if you get in the trial and it turns out not to be true, the venue is automatically reversed. There's a presumption that a district court has jurisdiction, so that in a special appearance, I don't think you battle truth and falsity, although that one may come the closest. But I'm not aware that we traditionally let our finders of fact assess credibility based purely on what an affidavit says. And wouldn't this be a change from traditional Texas procedure if there's an objection?
Your Honor, we would submit that, for instance, a special appearance, motion for protections, the procedure of filing affidavits in support, are two examples of factual dispute resolution where affidavits are admissible. Summary, according to the city, means set it quickly. But they are asking this court to step out onto that slippery slope of a plenary hearing. Witnesses, cross-examination, we will then see, as able counsel representing their clients, discovery sent, depositions taken, requests for production, all on this side sub-issue.
Well, that could be done anyway, couldn't it?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you can also present a deposition by written questions that's very little more trouble than an affidavit.
Perhaps, Your Honor, but we get away from summary. Yes, perhaps we could have done that, but then the other side is going to take it.
But they could have done it anyway.
They could have done it anyway.
If they'd known this affidavit was going to be admitted by Judge Tipps, they could have done everything you just gave in your parade of horribles.
If Judge Tipps allowed it. We think summary means that we were entitled to a quick, expeditious hearing.
Then couldn't a trial judge still limit it and say, I'm going to have a hearing in 2 weeks, you can do it in, you can't, if you want to do it in 2 weeks?
Perhaps, Your Honor.
Other than objecting to the affidavit as hearsay, did opposing counsel seek to call any witnesses to controvert the affidavit or to submit a controverting affidavit or seek a continuance or do anything to try to introduce any evidence to controvert your affidavit?
No, Your Honor. There were repeated statements that we have a multitude of witnesses ready to come charging into this court and testify, but we're not going to call them if all they have is an affidavit, even after the objection was overruled for the third or fourth time.
What if the city had filed an affidavit controverting the allegations in your act?
Your Honor, we then think the court can compare the two and make its decision based on that.
How can it factually dispute?
The same as a the court would in a special appearance or on a motion for protection. We have cited numerous cases in our briefing concerning the availability of mandamus, Texas Courts of Appeals, Merrill Lynch v. Longoria, USX Corporation v. West, Shearson-Lehman case, Justice O'Connor in her treatise states that mandamus is the appropriate remedy because such orders are appealable only after final judgment pursuant to the Texas Arbitration Act. We'll also note that those cases that we cite, those Texas cases, in not one of them was there a plenary evidentiary hearing. We have cases decided solely on argument, cases decided where only the contract was before the court, and the Merrill Lynch case where only affidavits were considered.
Any questions?
Thank you, counsel. That concludes the arguments of the court. The foregoing causes are submitted on briefs and oral arguments. The marshal will now adjourn the court.
The audience will please rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned. Subject to call.